back, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. This is Red Eyes Radio. I'm Henrik Kavlgren, and redeyes.tv is our website. We're speaking with Philip de Winter and Sam Van Roy from the Flemish Bloc, the Vlaams Belang in Belgium, about their struggle of independence, of becoming their own country, and how mass immigration, and particularly Islam, has been forced on these people against their will. We speak about the horrible demographic situation in Belgium and other European countries as more and more migrants pour into Europe. Philip de Winter is an author, a famous politician in Belgium, a known activist against the Islamization of Europe, and he's been in politics for many, many years now. Now, with him joining us during the discussion, we also have Sam Van Roy. He's also an author and an activist within the Flemish Bloc of the political party. We have one segment lined up with these gentlemen today, so I hope you enjoy and learn something new. All right, welcome, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to have you both on the show. Thank you so much for being here. Philip, of course, we met at Amran in Tennessee not too long ago. Great to have you with us. And, of course, we have also Sam Van Roy joining in as well. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Well, I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be great. We have so much to discuss, so many important things that's happening in Europe right now. And, frankly, I can't believe how fast, you know, this is going. But, Philip, let me just ask you first. Give us just a little bit of background of how long you've been in politics now.
Well, I've been in politics for almost 30 years now. I was elected when I was 35 as a young member of parliament, and I'm still in parliament, and I'm 53 now. So I'm in office for 28 years, as they say. And I've seen Europe changing a lot during the last 25 years. That's what it's all about at this moment. Our struggle against multiculturalism, against radical Islam, against mass immigration, became the most important topics in politics all over Europe. And certainly after what happened the last few years, the attempts of radical Islam to take over Europe by means of violence, but not only by violence, also by the means of mass immigration and so on. So our political force is growing, not only in my country, but I think all over Europe. France with Marine Le Pen and Front National, Austria with Strache. In Italy with the Lega Nord, and of course also in Holland with Geert Wilders and his Freedom Party. Our movement is growing very fast, is doing well, and I think we are a sort of alternative for the traditional political parties, and I'm happy to be one of the spokesmen of this movement in Europe.
Very good. And Sam, just tell us when you got involved, and also if you have some more info for our audience in terms of Vlaams Belang, the Flemish Bloc, of how many years you guys been in operation now.
Well, the party already exists for more than 35 years. I got involved now almost 5 years ago. I am an engineer in construction originally. But after some years, I started to get interested in politics. And first, I worked for Geert Wilders in Holland from the Freedom Party, the party that Philip also mentioned, our brother party in Holland, actually. And then after, I started working for the Vlaams Belang until now. And yeah, I chose for this party, although I come from a socialist family, actually. My parents were in the past, not anymore, fortunately, but they were in the past socialists. And I chose for Vlaams Belang because it's the only party that is defending our own culture, our own way of living, our values, our the wealth that we built the last decades. And all the other parties, yeah, they're just selling us out to globalization, to mass immigration, and also to the European Union, because that is actually a new kind of enemy that that we have since, since 10, 20 years. European Union that is getting much more strong and taking away our sovereignty, taking away our freedom, taking away our democracy, and we as a Flemish nationalist party that wants to split up Belgium, of course, in the first place. Eh? We want our own Flemish state, our own Flemish republic, our own Flemish democracy. But the European Union, yeah, is taking away that dream now more than anything.
Absolutely. So 35 years, obviously, that's a time really before the increase, if you will, that we've seen in mass immigration into Europe. So tell our audience a bit, either one of you who want to pick up on this, about the Flemish nationalist movement, if you will, the desire to become your own, country, region. What's some of the goals that you guys have?
Our first goal is Flemish independence, of course. And for more than 15 years, Flanders was part of the Netherlands. And then after Napoleon lost the war at Waterloo, the English and the Germans, they wanted sort of a buffer state in between Germany and France, and they put it together an artificial state called Belgium, part of France, part of Holland, two different languages, two different people. They found a king somewhere in Germany, and that's Belgium.
Right.
It's a completely artificial state that has no real identity, no real citizenship. And while we are the Flemish people, who are a majority in Belgium, we're always discriminated. So our struggle for independence is a legitimate struggle, I think. And I think that at this moment already a majority of the population is in favor of Flemish independence. So it's not a question of Belgium will split up, and if Flanders will become independent, the only question is when will Flanders become independent? And if it will be our decision, we would say if it could be today, better than tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, what was it, King Leopold I and II? They were siblings with Princess Victoria of the UK, I believe, right? So They placed a person in there that they could see fit to rule the region, I guess. But Flemish culture is much more ancient than that, right? It goes way back, and it has an anchoring in heritage and culture that Belgium, if you will, doesn't have. Is that correct?
Yes, of course. Belgium was founded in 1830, so Flanders was already there in the Middle Ages and long before. We have a history that goes back a long time with our own language, our own culture. Flanders always was in the heart of Europe and was very powerful in the past. So it's obvious that Belgium is an artificial state that was only put together to serve the interests of, first of all, England and Germany. That's about it.
Yeah, and so Belgium has, of sorts, then become a perfect vessel for housing the European Union, another artificial created entity, right?
It's no coincidence that Brussels, the capital of Belgium, is also the capital of the EU. I'm not saying of Europe, because I'm pro-European, but I'm anti-EU, I'm anti-European institutions. Well, you can't compare both. They are both artificial. They are not supported by the people. They don't believe in democracy and freedom of speech. So yes, the European Union and Belgium, you can't compare them. They are both of the same.
All right. We'll go into immigration and Islam in particular here in a moment. But first, tell us a bit about what you guys think about Brexit and where this will lead the EU. There's been talk that other countries want to do something similar. Is there a real chance if they get a leave vote in England and Britain that this will have a kind of a domino effect in other European countries?
Well, yes, of course. And let me first say that this referendum about leaving the European Union, the Brexit referendum, is a very logical thing that is happening now, because if you look at the history of the United Kingdom, then you see that actually, and there are a lot of lies going on about it, but the truth is that it was actually always very skeptical towards political integration, towards the European Union. They became a member very late of the European Union, only in the 80s, and they decided to never have the euro valuta, never have the European coin. And they also are not in the Schengen zone. That means that they are not in the one zone where there are no border controls. So European, so Great Britain has always been very skeptical. And you see that the people now in Great Britain, yeah, they are, they don't want to live anymore under the dictatorship of that European Union. It's devastating for their trade, for example. The European Union has always told that they were good for trade, for economy, but we see exactly the opposite. Great Britain is a very powerful trading country, and it has much more possibilities to trade with all over the world, with China, with South America, with India, if it's out of that European Union. So I think they have a really good chance of leaving it. And of course, that will open the doors for other countries as well to make the same reasoning and to think about the many advantages that leaving this European Union, which is actually a prison. You should really see it as a prison in a political way and an economical way. And also farmers, I mean, if we finally would have our independent state and we would erase Belgium from the map, yeah, then of course we also don't want to be dictated by the European Union as a Flemish democracy.
Oh, indeed, very true. EU, of course, is known for its incredible waste in all its resources and its bureaucracy and everything else. Now, is it the European Union that has forced, if we just talk about Belgium in particular first, is it the EU that forced mass immigration upon Belgium, or has there been enough liberal politicians in Belgium that have kind of opened the doors themselves before this began?
Well, the last thing that you said is, of course, true. They cooperate in having more and more immigrants here. It's the Belgian establishment and the Belgian elite that saw many advantages in the European Union. First of all, to have more power, more and more power. They see it as a way of having more power even than before, and erasing actually more and more of our democracy. And yeah, they also want to actually make our identity weaker, because the more immigrants that come into Europe, but also into Belgium, the weaker our Flemish identity becomes, and the weaker all other identities in Europe become, the Italian identity, the Danish identity. They just make that weaker with mass immigration, especially from Islamic countries.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my wife and I traveled through Antwerp, when was this now, 2011?
That's my own town.
There you go. Yeah, so you know how bad it is there. I mean, it was just amazing to see. I mean, it was like a foreign, colony, basically. It was almost like even the traffic rules of classic Western civilization had gone out the rules, and we thought we were in Egypt for a little bit or something. Describe a little bit this for people who don't know what it is like right now in Belgium in terms of the demographics and in terms of how much immigration you guys have.
Well, you know, in Europe we have about 20 million Muslims at this moment. That's for the European Union. In the whole of Europe it will be 40 million. But if you want to describe this situation, you have to look to the big cities, because there's an enormous difference between the countryside and the cities. But in the cities, the situation is devastating. You talked about Antwerp. It's also my hometown, and city councilor in Antwerp. And if I look to Antwerp, I see that at this moment, in the primary schools, we have more than 50% of Muslims. In the whole of the town, we have about 22% of Muslims. 40% of all the people in Antwerp are immigrants, large majority non-European immigrants. And the let's say the white population, the European Flemish population, that's about still 50-55% of the population. But this is an elder population, while non-European immigrants are much younger. So they will take over, eventually they will take over the cities, sort of a third world immigration. Antwerp, and Antwerp, you can compare it with Paris, with Amsterdam, with Berlin, with Madrid, with all the big European cities. It's the first world city with an increasing third world population. And that means that you also have third world situations, whole neighborhoods, who are already in the hands of Muslims. They have their own mosques, their own shops, their own way of doing things with Sharia law, who is implicated, and so on and so on. So it's out of control, these no-go zones. You have a lot of that in our European cities. We don't have any control anymore. The permanent conflict with the police, they don't accept our local authorities anymore. It's a hostile takeover.
Yeah. Yep. That's what it is. I mean, we've had now then, most recently, the Paris attacks, November last year. Just a few days ago, of course, you guys are aware, the retired police chief and his wife was stabbed to death by a Muslim immigrant who had allegiance to ISIS. Also, just a few days ago, a girl was stabbed in Paris. I think she has survived, thank God. And, of course, we've had the shootings in Orlando. This is just within the recent time frame. Is this the so-called normal everyday life in the West now? Or what is this?
Well, it's becoming, unfortunately, it's becoming the everyday life. We see that the frequency of these jihadi attacks, because that is exactly what it is, and we should name that, because it's very important to give it the right name. It is Islam terrorism, Islamic terrorism. It is called jihad, and the terrorist attacks that you named are jihadi attacks. And they are becoming more and more frequent. And that is also not surprising. I mean, if you allow that more and more Muslims come into the European countries, then of course more and more Islamic terror attacks will follow. That's just common sense to realize that and to know that. And that makes it so much more unbelievable that the politicians who are in charge keep doing that. We have this major attack in Brussels, in our airport and in our subway system, and still our borders are wide open. It's like they want us to be attacked. It's like they want us to be taken over by jihad. And people are scared. Our economy is doing worse than ever because of these jihadi attacks, because tourists don't dare to come anymore. People are scared, like I said. So it can change a continent like Europe and a country like Belgium, or the country that we want, Flanders, can change so rapidly into a sort of a Middle East. That is what we are becoming. We are becoming a Middle East in Europe.
Yeah. Any other people, I think, frankly, would recognize if this was happening to them. They would see that this as a threat. I mean, let's put the shoe on the other foot, as they say, and place this into a different scenario. If Europeans would be, migrating into a Middle Eastern country and starting to commit terror attacks in the name of Christianity or some old pagan religion or something, I mean, there would be an outrage around the world, I would think, and these countries would do everything they could to clamp down on this and stop immigration. For some reason, we in the West, we in Europe in particular, are, I don't know how to put it, but it's almost like we are not allowed to preserve our own heritage and culture and have a sense of identity and preserve this. What is going on? How would you guys describe this?
That's what multiculturalism is all about, of course. Eh? In fact, multiculturalism is sort of a new communism. Left-wing, after the fall of the Soviet Union and the Iron Curtain and the Berlin Wall, they ran out of ideas, and it was a big failure of communism. And then they searched for a new political project, and they found this project in multiculturalism. And they want to organize a society without ethnical or cultural differences. And therefore they used the immigration, the mass immigration, to start up this diversity thing, this multicultural society. And, but it, it also meant that everybody should be politically correct. You can't talk about identity anymore, you can't talk about ethnicity anymore, you can't talk about that sort of things. It's all condemned as being racist, and so on, and so on. And that means that, well, also at this moment, now we are confronted with the reality of multiculturalism. We took in all those Muslims. We didn't want to know that their culture was not compatible with ours. And now we are facing the fact that, in fact, there is a clash between a class of civilizations, a clash between our way of life, our culture, and their way of life. And how can we deal with it? We have to shut down our borders, of course. We should do what Trump is saying in the United States of America, shut down our borders for all Muslims. But what are we going to do with those Muslims who are already over here? 20 million in the European Union, 40 million in the whole of Europe. We should split them up in those who are willing to not only to integrate, but to assimilate into our society, and those who are not willing. And that won't be easy, because a lot of them, maybe millions of them, will have to leave Europe. Certainly all the illegal ones, certainly all those who committed crimes, and so on, all those who are unemployed. But also those who don't want to assimilate into our society. And it's still an open question. If you are Muslim, do you really are able to integrate and to assimilate into our society? I don't believe so. That's why our politicians invented so-called European Islam. And you tear out of the Quran all those pages about the inequality of man and woman, the separation of the state and the church, and so on, and then you have a sort of European Islam. I don't believe that something like that will happen. There is no question of European Islam to be established in Europe. The only thing that will happen is the Islamization of Europe. But a lot of people are opening their eyes now after what happened in Paris, Madrid, Brussels, London, all those terrible terrorist attacks. People are aware now that Islam is not just another religion. That it's a threat for the whole of Europe, and that we are at war. Not only with so-called radical Islam, with the terrorists of the S, we are at war with Islam. That's it.
Absolutely, and it's a matter of repatriation. It's only a matter of political will, I would say. But speaking to your point there, Philip, Sadiq Khan, the new mayor of London, had actually proposed that. You know, so-called light-clad women in advertisements is something that is supposed to go away now in London. And what's interesting is that the feminists almost seem to give way, the liberals seem to have given way to this. And they're almost like, yeah, actually, it's a good idea because we shouldn't objectify women. It's almost like we see an alignment of left liberalism and Islam here, which is like, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's totally amazing. And it's crazy, actually, to see that all these leftist people and liberals who fought against Christianity and the Catholic Church here in Europe and in Belgium, to see how they now appease to Islam and, yeah, just letting our country Islamize. And indeed, they are now so happy that there is a Muslim mayor in London, this Sadiq Khan. They are as happy as when Obama, the first black president, became the president of the United States. And it all comes down I wanted to say that as an answer also to your previous question, that actually Europe is in a mental prison, which I would like to call the tyranny of guilt. And you should really read, I would advise the listeners to read the book of Pascal Bruckner. He's a French author, and he wrote a book with the title The Tyranny of Guilt, and he shows how Christianity and a perverted postmodern form of Christianity has led us to always feel guilty about everything that goes wrong in the world and in this society. And that makes these sort of feminists, like you mentioned, that makes them, they feel so guilty about our own past that they welcome every new ideology or every new culture in our own society, even if it's a threat to our own society, like the mayor of Sadiq Khan, who now indeed, in a very sneaky way, has said that he will take away these naked billboards, so-called, because they have this, this model, unrealistic view on women. Which, of course, there is some truth in what he says, but he should not, as a mayor, forbid it, because then he's starting to take away freedoms that we have in Europe, and he's disguising himself under maybe analysis that has some good points to actually introduce very slowly Sharia law.
Yes, absolutely, and it's ethno-masochism, and we have been, I think, propagandized into taking this position that somehow we don't have a right to defend our heritage and our culture and who we are, but. Frankly, I can't believe that most of the elites that are running European politics and these politicians and business, etc., that are advocating for mass immigration are so stupid that they don't know the history between Islam and Europe and of all the attacks. They pin, of course, things like the Crusades on us without recognizing the hundreds of attacks that occurred on Europe before that time. Are they just playing dumb, or are they truly dumb to this question of the history of Islam in Europe?
Well, they are so involved in this multicultural project that they they are aware of what is happening. I'm, for many years, I'm a politician. I'm always surrounded, not always, but many times I'm surrounded in parliament and government buildings by politicians. And if you talk with them privately, they all say the same. You're right. We have a problem, and multiculturalism is a failure, and we should change our politics. But what can we do? There are already so many of them here. We have to appease them. We have to try to find a consensus. And so they can't back off anymore. Multiculturalism is their project. They took in millions and millions of those Muslims and other immigrants. What can they do? Commit that they were wrong? That would mean political suicides for most of these politicians and these parties. And don't forget that certainly for the left-wing parties, those immigrants, also the Muslims, have become their new voters. Most of the traditional left-wing voters, the working people, are voting for right-wing, patriotic parties now. My party, Blaus Blanc, but also Front National in France, VVD in Holland. The majority of our voters are ordinary working class people who are, not happy about what is happening, who are confronted in their own neighborhoods with multiculturalism. They are the first victims of mass immigration and Islam. It's not the left-wing intellectual or politician who is living in his nice neighborhood, in his villa, in swimming pool, who is confronted with multiculturalism.
Yeah.
It's the working class people. And they are voting for us. So they have a sort of a surrogate voter, and these are the European immigrants. So what can they do? It's no coincidence that first mayor, Islamic mayor of London, is a labor guy. He's from the Socialist Party.
Yeah.
And in the Socialist Party, if they wouldn't have those Muslim votes, they would not have the mayor of London, they would not have the mayor of Antwerp, they would not have the mayor of so many cities while they are still in power. Although they lost power if only people from France or British or Belgian or German origin would be able to vote. And that's, I think, the big problem for the future of Europe, that the political elite is so involved in this multicultural project that they can't admit that they were wrong.
Right, it's a kind of a sense of pride, and also a lack of backbone and balls, really. The fact that they don't dare to speak up against their failures, right?
Yeah. I think there's a total lack of courage nowadays in the West in general, but especially in the West of Europe, because we see, of course, that in the East of Europe, for example, you see a total different mentality towards Islam and towards mass immigration, like Hungary, for example, who closed its borders for everybody, but especially for Muslims, with Viktor Orban, who says literally that he doesn't want Islamization of his country, that it's against the law in his country to Islamize. So that's a big difference between the East and the West. And it's a lack of courage indeed, and the cause of that lack of courage, I think, is that we become so wealthy. The last decades have given us everything, flat screen TVs, vacations, cheap vacations, going skiing, that people became soft. They became soft, they are spoiled. I'm only 31, but I go into many schools to debate about politics with children of 16, 17 year olds, and I just see how spoiled and decadent they are and our society has become, and that is actually what worries me the most.
Yeah, materialism, there isn't any real principle taught by our society anymore, but if anything, then what's happening now in Europe is driving us out of our comfort zone faster than many other things would do, right? What's the glimmer of hope in all of this, with the attacks, as you guys mentioned, with the increasing mass immigration into Europe? People are actually beginning to wake up, and they're looking for political alternatives. We must point out how dire the situation is to continue to try to wake people up, but we should also encourage them to not lose all hope, right? And the fact that there are things that they can do.
But as they say, things must go worse before they can become better.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's true. It's a shame, but that's the way things are happening now. Maybe we needed those attacks. Maybe we needed the mass invasion of refugees. Maybe we needed the confrontation with radical Islam before people would open their eyes and understood that this is multiculturalism. This is not only sort of extremist bypass of multiculturalism. No, this is multiculturalism. And maybe this can be a changing point also, because I have the impression that in a lot of European countries, maybe the political elite looks the other way, but the people are fed up. They have enough of it. And they are voting for right-wing patriotic parties. And certainly in middle Europe and in Eastern Europe, we see that already political parties who are in charge, for example, Viktor Orban in Hungary, but also in other countries, are standing up and doing what they have to do. So there is hope. Politics is always about hope. And there is hope, also in Western Europe. But it will still take some time. And the only thing I'm afraid of, that it will take too much time. Because there will be a point of no return. Sooner or later, there will be a point of no return. In my own city, as I told you, 52% of the youngsters in the primary schools are Muslims. It will only take one, two generations, 20, 25 years, because before they represent the majority in my city.
Yeah.
Then the point of no return is there. If we live in a democracy, and in a multicultural democracy, it can never be a democracy, because if the indigenous people are in the majority, everything is okay. But once the immigrants, certainly the Muslim immigrants, are in the majority, then it's over and out for our European civilization and our way of life. Then we are the minority, and they will let us feel that we are the minority. And I'm very afraid that this point of no return is coming very, very fast now.
Yeah, it is. It's just the reality of it, and we have to face that reality and continue to talk about it and make people understand what it is that they're creating. Because earlier, Philip, you mentioned, you know, if it's possible with integration, but so far it seems that it's second and even third generation immigrants that are actually turning to things like ISIS and are becoming radicalized, because I think they feel so out of place still within our society. No matter how much we try to appease them or make them fit in, I think on some level, many of them know this, and they might even have lived a secular life, if you will, as teenagers, but then later on, they turn to something like this because it makes them feel part of something, it makes them feel anchored to their culture and heritage, which is understandable, frankly, because they are out of place. They should not be in Europe, right?
Yeah, it's exactly true. The elites and the politicians in charge the last decades have totally ignored how important cultural and ethnical roots are in everywhere in the world. I mean, go to anywhere, go to Japan, for example, go to Australia, go to Russia, and you will see how different the people are, how different their culture is, their mentality. They have a whole different history. Even also, of course, within Europe, we see these huge differences. And that is one of the reasons that this European Union project with this euro can never succeed, because the Greek people, for example, are totally different than the people in Denmark, and the people in Denmark are totally different than the people in Portugal. And that is why this European integration can never work, and that is, of course, why mass immigration can never work. Never. In no way. You cannot, for example, also from another country than the Islamic countries. Let's say that we have now in Flanders, we are with 6 million people. Let's say we would bring in now, in some years, 1 million people from Argentina, from South America, for example. That would also lead to many, many big problems. But of course, it's still a big difference when the cultures are so much different from each other, like the Islamic culture versus the European, the Western culture. Yeah, then it's absolutely not possible to integrate.
Now, so we have, of course, the conflict in Syria that has been driving the most recent mass migration wave into Europe. We have people, of course, not only coming from Syria, many of them are from Afghanistan, other North African countries and Middle Eastern countries. But why is it, even per international law, that these people just don't stop in the first peaceful country that they get to? They actually go all the way to Germany or to Sweden or to, you know, many of these other countries. Why do they want to come to our countries in Western Europe?
Because we are wealthy and they are not. I think that's about it.
Right, right.
they want what we have, and they think they can just take it because they think we've stolen it from them. That's about it. That's what we told them many, many years. We were racist, we were colonialists, we colonized them and we took their wealth, and now we are wealthy and they are poor, and so on. We were usurpators and whatever. So, and they believed it. Of course they believed it. It's easy to believe. They never talk about their own responsibility in the third world countries, in Africa and so on. It's all about religion, it's all about wealth. About civilization also. So, and now they want what we have. This mass communication, they don't have work, they don't have a decent life, but they do have a cell phone, and they do have television. So they see all the propaganda and the advertisement, and they want to say, that's about it. I was many times in Africa, and the only thing I hear from them is, we want your wealth. And so, if they don't, if they can't have it like this, they will take it. Sooner or later, they will take it. It's what Boumediene said. The atomic bomb of Islam and of the third world it lies in the belly of our woman. And we will maybe not take it by force, but we will take it by the way of immigration. And that's what's happening now.
Yeah.
And what we are, what's happening now, is only the first step, I think, towards even more massive immigration towards Europe. You have to understand somebody who has really nothing, who lives somewhere in the desert of Sudan. Even a refugee camp somewhere in Germany or in Belgium is 10 times better than the situation he lived in his own country.
Right.
So they will come and they will keep on coming until we close our borders, and that's what we have to do. We have to close the borders of Europe. Otherwise, it will mean the end of Europe and all that it stands for.
Right, it's a moral question. It's a question of us putting down our foot and daring to have the courage and the political will to just do this, right? Because on some level, it's true what you say, Philip. They many of them, frankly, they've been programmed by the liberal media, and so they hate us who we are. They call us or us racist. They tell us how horrible we've been in the past, and yet they want to come to our countries, right? Yet they want to be where we are. And I think many of them see us as weak as well. They see that they can actually, whether they're aware of it, conscious of it or not, they can exploit our generosity and our naivety. So what will it take for us to turn the tables here and turn this around? Is it just more terrorism, more mass immigration? Is it more of the same, or is it something else that we can do to try to wake up our people in time? I mean, because if they have to experience all of this for themselves, if they have to be personally part of a terrorist attack or something for them to change their opinions, then it's going to be, I think, too late in the game to awaken all our people.
Well, this is, of course, exactly why we are in politics, and we are doing politics every day, not only in the parliament, but also in society, by trying to get into the media, by also trying to have influence in schools, in our education system, because the reason why many Europeans are still not aware enough of what is happening and are still not brave enough to resist it is because they are brainwashed still by mainstream ideas and mainstream media that says to them, if you come up for yourself, if you stand up for your way of living, your culture, your values, then you are a racist. And that is why many people are so afraid, because they are afraid of being called a racist. So, yeah, that is what we do every day, saying to these people, don't let them fool you. You are not a racist. You are a patriot, and you have the right to come up for your own culture, your own country, your own society, your own civilization. And that is the propaganda that we should keep repeating over and over as much as possible as a sort of anti-propaganda.
Has the support for your bloc increased after the Brussels attacks? Have more and more people come over to your side?
Yes, of course they do. Massively. We are up in the polls with 10% at least. But, of course, our struggle is not only about winning the mind and the hearts of the people. We also have to resist against our enemies. And therefore, I'm very afraid that this all will end up a sort of civil war. Well, maybe this is already a sort of an urban guerrilla.
Yeah.
2 days ago, I was in Calais, where you have the famous jungle. It's a sort of, illegal city with illegal aliens. They have their own shops, their own internet, their own police force, their own pubs, their own mosques, their own schools, their own hospitals. They have everything over there. And it's allowed by the authorities because they can't handle it. And I'm very afraid what I've seen there is maybe the future of what will happen in many cities in Europe. And I think we at the edge of losing our big cities. Look to Paris, where you have already more than 120 no-go zones. Look to Brussels, Molenbeek, and that sort of areas. We are losing, we already lost those neighborhoods and maybe those cities. And I'm very afraid that in the future it will be a sort of a civil war of the countryside, where you have the indigenous people living against the big cities, where you have the non-European Muslim immigrants who will be in charge and in power. And both sides will radicalize. Both sides will radicalize. And what will happen then? That's where I'm very, very afraid for. Sort of a civil war in Europe, a racial, at least cultural civil war into Europe. Should we prepare this situation? Or should we be so naive to think that we can change it by the means of, by democratic means and then by, doing what we are doing now?
Yeah.
I'm asking myself, I don't have any answers to these questions.
Right.
I'm only making this analysis because I think that it's going the wrong way. And this will be, it's already a part of the present actual situation. And it will only increase, it will only become worse. So I'm very afraid of the future.
I share those concerns, absolutely. I'll ask you in a moment if and how we can prepare for something like that. But before, let's say, we get to that stage, let's talk about the scenario of, let's say, a government which is so far majority native or Western European or European, whatever nation we're talking about here. Where would they be in all of this, right? Because if we assume that we have an uprising of sorts, more attacks from the immigrant population, either from on an Islamic level, that this is somehow a religiously driven ideological battle or whatever it might be, would they side with us, or would the government side with the immigrants in all of this? I think that's one of the most interesting questions right now, that if we were beginning to defend ourselves, even in some capacity, if we were beginning to be attacked, I think that at this stage the government would turn on us and see us as the guilty party. What do you gentlemen think?
Yeah, of course. I have no confidence at all in the side that the government that has made all this horrible stuff happen, that they will side with us. Of course not, because we see this already for many decades, that they choose, in the first place, they choose for themselves. And that means that they do everything to stay in power at any means. And Michel Houellebecq, a famous French writer, has written actually a book about that, when with a Muslim president coming in charge in France, and all the people around him, ministers, but also people at the universities, let's call them the establishment, well, they are willing to introduce Sharia law from one day to the other, because of course they choose to for themselves, and they don't care for all the people that have to live then in these horrible Sharia laws and situation. They just are very opportunistic. So I have no confidence at all in that. And many people have no confidence at all, because we hear more and more people who tell us that they start going to shooting clubs, for example. They start to arm themselves. And that is the best proof, of course, that they have no confidence at all anymore in the police or in the government.
Yes, encouraging trend, of course. People are beginning to prepare themselves in various ways, if not the least mentally. But I know that you'll probably need to leave for a vote here soon, Philip. So I want to make sure that we actually talk a bit about your latest book, Inshallah, The Islamization of Europe. Tell us a bit about when the book was released and what some of the main thrust is of the book.
Well, the book was released some years ago, but it was translated to in English, in French, in Spanish, in German, and so on and so on already. And we also tried to update it as many times as we could. And it's not easy to update because all sorts of things are happening almost every day.
Every day, yeah.
But it's about what happened the last 30, 40 years, from the 50s until now. How immigration turned out to be a sort of new ideology, sort of the multicultural project, why the socialist parties embraced this idea, how it all went wrong, what happened with why we took in radical Islam, because we wanted to lower the oil prices. That's what was it all. That was all about in the 70s and the late 60s, and so on and so on. So it's I hope it's an interesting book. about the reasons why all those problems occurred in Europe, why we are confronted today with mass immigration, with terrorist attacks, with radical Islam, and so on and so on. It's not only describing the situation today. I hope I've written a book about the whole history of mass immigration and the link with Islam in Europe.
Yes, exactly. The background, how Islam was founded and how it got started, specifically, of course, in Chapter 1, you begin at the beginning, but in Chapter 2, you talk a bit about the demographic pressure that we are under, specifically in the West. I think this is an important question. How would you explain this to, let's say, the uninitiated, who is not aware at all of how dire it is in terms of demographics? What would you say to them? What should they know so that they understand why you are so concerned with the demographics?
Well, it's all about demography, of course. Our people are dying. Indigenous people are dying, while the third world country is on the rise. Just to give you not too much, but such figures, if you have to know that, well, the Muslim population worldwide is expected to increase by 35% in the next 20 years. Goes from 1.6 billion now to about 2.5 billion in 2030. If you compare Europe with Africa, only 50 years ago, we have about 500 million inhabitants in Europe. Africa had about 300 million. Africa will count about a billion people within 35 years,
yeah.
And we will have maybe 450 million left. So mass immigration is also a question of demography, and it's sort of a colonization of Europe that is going on now, a hostile takeover because of the demographic evolution in the third world countries. If you look to the 20 most important third world countries, their population will triple within the next 2 to 3 decades, and our population will only decrease.
Right.
That's what's happening in Europe, and I think that's one of the main problems. We should not only talk about mass immigration, but also the reasons why there is this mass immigration. And we can't resist against mass immigration if we don't have a young, fertile, dynamic population also of Europeans. It's not with people of 75 and 80 years old that we're going to resist against Islam and mass immigration. Eh? We need a young and dynamic population. And lots of politicians over here are saying, well, we have that young and dynamic population. Young Muslims, they will replace our population. We need them because we need youngsters. We need working people. We need active young people who are dynamic. And instead of taking those measures who are necessary to increase our own young population, indigenous young population, we're just taking in the immigrants. And that's what happened to Rome many centuries ago. I suggest everybody should read the Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire of Gibbon, and it's the same story all over again.
Yep, it's true. It's true. Well, I mean, there's so many reasons for the low birth rates, from propaganda of global warming and feminism and social justice warrior issues. And I mean, it's insanity what's happening in the West, while, of course, other immigrant families are incentivized to have children. They get more money having them. And while we struggle, I think it was Anke Philip that spoke to Lana about this, about the fact that Belgium is very very hard on native people and families, if you will. It's expensive to raise a child, while immigrant families are incentivized to have children.
You have a birth rate of about 1.4 with indigenous people, and you have a birth rate of about 3.8 to 4.1 with the non-immigrant, the non-European immigrants. So, if you compare, it's quite simple to come to the conclusion that if we don't do anything, it's over within a few generations. So what should we do? We should promote traditional family values and support families, man, woman, children. That's about it. I know that's not politically correct.
No, I don't care.
If you don't promote traditional family values, it's over and out.
Yeah, it's simple enough. Procreate, folks.
I think Japanese is should be our example. The Japanese, they are doing that. They also have a very a low birth rate. They have a huge problem with people aging. But the president, he's very clear on that. He just says, we keep our borders closed. We don't want any other people or culture here. And he's now starting with a program to motivate people in Japan to get more children. And so that is what should happen here.
Yeah, I mean, the even automation, technology now, there's different ways of solving this. This is why Japan has invested so much in robotics, of course. But I think that the demographics, they do fluctuate. You can't have a civilization that continuously always is going to have an increase and a growth. I mean, what happened to the environmental movement? All of these people are going to come to Europe. We're cutting down the forests. It's all farmlands. There's nothing left. It's just sprawl and cities. I mean, this is insanity, if you ask me.
You're absolutely right, and I would recommend reading a Dutch demographer about that, Joop Hartog. He's on retirement now, but he wrote a brilliant thesis indeed about what you say, that the population within a country, within certain borders, there is an optimum quantity of that. And for example, for Holland, it's a country I know very well, the Netherlands, they are now with almost 17 million people, of which, of course, the same as in Belgium, a lot of them are already immigrants and Muslims. But the optimum number of people in Holland to have the best economy would actually be 10 million people.
Yeah.
So it should not increase. It should actually decrease. And the same is actually true for Flanders and for Belgium, I'm sure. But, of course, next to the quantity, there's also the quality of the people, of course.
Yes. Yeah.
And they should be in a working age, and they should, of course, be with our culture, of course.
Well, I mean, we practice what's known as high investment parenting. When most Europeans and Westerners have a child, they want to make sure that they can raise the child right, that they have money to do so. That's one of the reasons why many people end up waiting to have children, because they feel it's not the right time. I think a third world population don't really have the same sense of planning, and that could partially be related to the fact that they have just recently come out of this stage where they basically, they might plan to have four children, but many of them are going to die at a young age, so they actually have eight or nine children. And out of those eight or nine, about four or three maybe survive. Now, our Western medicine and technology and everything else have helped these populations to explode, right? So despite the fact that we get charged with exploitation and genocide and even mass murder of third world countries, I mean, it's due to us that Africa is projected to be around 4 billion at the end of the century, right?
Yeah, of course, that's true. I mean, they've got our technology in many ways, but they didn't take over our culture. They remained in their much more primitive and many ways retarded culture. But indeed, with our technology, they managed to grow enormously. And so I'm also someone that say that we should stop doing that, of course. We keep giving them money and helping them with technology. And the return is that they only expand as a people. And also that they don't have to have their own responsibility to get on their own feet. Because if you always get money for free, yeah, then there is nothing in you that says, oh, I have to take my responsibility. And that is that's something we know inside Belgium also. That's why we want to split up. Flanders is giving billions of euros every year to Wallonie.
Yeah.
And that's the reason that Wallonie keeps in this economical, very bad situation. And the same is true for Greece and for Italy and all these South European countries. But the same is, of course, true for the third world. They should get up on their own feet and manage themselves in order to have some progress.
Absolutely. All right. Well, gentlemen, we're coming to the end of our time here this time. But I do want to know if there's any final thoughts. I guess we can begin with you, Philip, in case you're in the most hurry here. Please tell us, you know, what you want our audience to know about the party, about what you guys are actively doing now, if there's a way they can help out, and anything else in terms of the information and the books and so forth that you have available where people can go to pick up copies of your books, for example.
Oh, it's very simple. They can pick up a copy on my website. It's philipdewinter.org or fdw.nu. So if you go on my website, you can just find everything you need and pick up the books. But I'm not here for selling books. I'm giving this interview to tell my political ideas. That's much more important. I think as a conclusion for this interview, I think, well, our message should be clear, right, that the West and certainly Europe needs to regain its fighting spirit. I think the Western Renaissance, well, that's what it's all about. It's only realistic if we get out of this multicultural straight jacket and we renounce cultural nihilism. And we get back our identity, and also we try to refine also our superiority as a Western civilization. Because if we don't do that, if we don't believe in our own superiority as civilization, of course, then I think it's over and out for the West. This cultural nihilism is breaking our spine. We don't have any fighting spirit left, and that's what's needed to win our struggle against multiculturalism, against mass immigration, and certainly against this aggressive religion and ideology, Islam.
Absolutely, yeah. Tell us too how people can support the Valams Balang. What can people get involved and join the party, support you guys financially? What's going on with that?
Of course, you can. Same answer on our website, blogsbelang.org. You find everything you need to support us financially, to buy our books for those who live in Belgium to vote, also for Blogs Belang, and for those who don't live, because I know that Reda's radio is listened to in the whole of Europe and, of course, also in the United States of America, to vote and to support those parties and groups and individuals, politicians also, who stand up for our ideas. Certainly now in the United States of America, vote Donald Trump, over here vote for the right-wing conservative and patriotic parties of Geert Wilders, Le Pen, Strache in Austria, and so on and so on. That's what they should do. Get involved. Go on the streets, take part in our manifestations, just join our movement.
Yes, survival, that's what this is about, ladies and gentlemen. There's no, you know, you can't sit around on your ass and think that this is going to change itself. You have to get involved in this. Sam, tell us a bit about your books. We didn't get a chance to kind of introduce you maybe as much as I would like to. Tell us if you have any website and if you have any books maybe in English that you'd like to tell our audience about.
Well, to begin with, I'm on Twitter. I have a Twitter account that is Sam Van Roy with the one behind at the end. So Sam Van Roy one. And my two books actually are about Islam, Islamization and the European Union. And they're both actually books that consist out of many different essays from Arabists, from historians, from scientists, who write about the danger of Islam and the danger of the European Union that is forcing us in Europe to Islamize, actually, and to make sort of Eurasia out of Europe. And what I believe actually is the most important thing that people should read, not only in my own books, but in general, if they want to be convinced about the danger of Islam, then they should read ex-Muslim people. I know many of them. I know many ex-Muslims from Morocco, from Turkey, from Pakistan. I have contact with them over the internet. They also have written in my book their thoughts. And these people, yeah, they are the best to convince you, because they were born in the Islamic system. They were raised in the Islamic system. They know how horrible it is. They left it and they have to fear for their own lives. And they can tell us that is Europe heading towards becoming a sort of Pakistan or becoming a sort of Saudi Arabia if we don't stop the same policy. And the same goes, and this is my conclusion, the same goes for the European Union, of course. If you want to know what the European Union is really doing and why we should resist it, they should listen to, for example, former communist people. They lived in the Soviet Union, and they see in this European Union a new sort of Soviet Union, and very totalitarian, and that's why it's very compatible also with Islam, and that is what my books are about.
Yeah, there's plenty of so-called whistleblowers from the Soviet Union, like Vladimir Bukovsky. There's others that have spoken out about this. You're absolutely right about that. All right, well, we will definitely add links to the websites, of course, to your Twitter, Sam, and any other way that you know people can get in touch with you guys. But thank you so much to both of you for joining us today, gentlemen. Having you here was great. I can't emphasize enough how important this kind of work is for the future of Europe. So thank you to both of you for your continuing fight. And I think more and more people will come to see that you guys are right. They will come over to our side. So please keep up the good fight, and we'd love to speak with you again in the future.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much, and lots of success with Red Eyes Radio.
Thank you so much for listening today. We have more shows coming later this week at 3:14 on Wednesday, and then we have Mark Collette on Brexit and the situation in UK after that. We'll, of course, be monitoring the results closely on Thursday and Friday to announce the Brexit results to you. Don't miss our live show on Saturday, 25th, at 5 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. That's 11 p.m. Central European time. That's 2300 hours. Exclusive live video show at redicemembers.com. Definitely don't miss it. All right, we'll talk to you soon. Have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much again for listening.